Morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started up here. So my name's Ken Hill. I'm the Brokers, Asset Managers, Exchanges Analyst here at Barclays. Up next, we have E*TRADE Financial. So representing the company today, we've got quite the dais up here. On hand is Mr. Roger Lawson, the new Executive Chairman, Carl Rosner, the new CEO, and Mike Pizzi, the CFO. Based on the crowd in the room and some of the press releases this week, it's definitely been a busy week, so I don't want to waste much time with an introduction. Gentlemen, thank you very much for all being here today.
Pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Wanted to kind of just get right into it. So Roger, first question for you. Can you tell us why the board decided now's the right time for a change in leadership? I mean, to myself, to investors, it seemed like Paul had done a very good job for his time at E*TRADE. So why did the board decide now's the time to make a change there and move forward in a different direction?
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Maybe by way of a little bit of background, I'll tell you a little bit about our board. This is a very good board, carefully selected for the skills they bring to bear. We have technologists who are strong in cyber. We have very, very good regulatory presence. We have marketing presence. We have financial presence. They're all people who lend a lot of value to the board and also to the company itself, and they're active. This isn't a wimpy sort of friend of a friend board. It's a very, very active board. It challenges management. It challenges each other. They don't sort of sit there and do nothing. It's a very active group. So I say that by way of background in terms of Ken's question. They do take the shareholder responsibility seriously. I'm sure all boards say that anyway, but the reality is they do. And we are very, very conscious of the past of the company. We're very conscious of the present. So in looking at what has happened over the course of the last few years, we're clearly pleased. A lot of good things have happened. I think certainly since the very dark days in 2008, and I certainly wasn't there then, but I was looking at the company from afar, I think from those dark days, there's been terrific progress on a lot of the financial issues, especially in the last 3 or 4 years. But it has also been, this has been cumulative work. It didn't sort of spring full form from the head of Zeus. It came along over a period of time. And the board is pleased. Financial performance and the deferred tax asset has given us a lot of financial flexibility to do some of the things we want to do, so we're very grateful. I think in terms of the risk environment of the company, it was poor. We have been berated and challenged by our regulators in no uncertain terms over a period of time, and I think we've made immense progress. We have strong risk presence on the board. We have strong risk presence in the company. And I think a lot of that has become very tangibly obvious in the last few years. And I think Paul, as the CEO, has done a first-class job in terms of working with our regulators. Obviously, the OCC and the Fed keep a very close eye on us. We work closely with them. They have been very helpful regulators. Everyone is appropriately balanced in terms of our roles. But I think we have built a good relationship, and I think Paul takes a lot of credit for that. And I think our regulator now believes that we're on the right path, and that's reflected in how they rate us as well. I think also to the specifics of Ken's question, we've made good progress on our operating infrastructure. I think for a while the company was just focused on survival, and any weaknesses in the operating infrastructure I think have been addressed and have been fixed. So it has been a good spell. So I think the prior CEO did a good job, and we are grateful for that, and we can say that without any inhibitions. And a lot of other people have done a good job as well. But being brutally frank with you, there are also other things that we have been concerned about. I, in my casual fashion, have referred to a lot of the financial issues as reaping the low-hanging fruit. I don't want to be pejorative about it. Sure, Mike had to work his tail off, and his predecessor did, to get the benefits of our refinancing of our debt and all the other things which have improved our financial performance. So we don't take them casually as something which is just done easily. But even while that was happening, and we're going back over several years, I think the board was concerned what would happen when we had gone through this period. I mean, a lot of you are focused on our earnings. Will we deliver the earnings from losses and what appeared to be a relatively net performance? I think we've done very, very well. But the board was viewed seriously when all that has been, for want of a better word, harvested, and our regulatory controls, our control environment generally, and our operating environment is solid, how do we grow? This is not something we decided on 5 minutes ago. It's something we talked about for several years, and the discussion has been around organic, inorganic, and wither the future of E*TRADE. And I would say we have made some good progress. Well, I guess we'll talk about Options House, which we think is we paid a full price for Options House, but we think it was a good acquisition. But I do think also during this spell, we have grown concerned, and we don't want to get self-satisfied about the fact we've improved financial performance or the risk environment is now rated by our regulators. We want to be sure that we're also able to grow. And I think, again, being perfectly blunt, we've been disappointed. It's not something that we've just discussed this week or last week. I mean, the board, the reason I characterize the board to you is they're not a bunch of wimps. They will sit back and discuss the future and discuss these issues. And I think we have sensed, particularly the last two or three years, that we've fallen behind the growth rate of our competition. And it's not as if it's weak competition. We have some pretty big players out there. And of that pool, we are the smallest of the large players. So we're very conscious of that, and much debate, much discussion, much endeavor, a lot of things have been tried, but eventually we said, enough. We would rather embrace a new management team. We'd rather put in place a group of people that we thought could drive that 2 or 3% extra growth. And 2 or 3% makes a hell of a big difference in this industry in terms of growth rates across the key business driver metrics. So we said we wanted to put in place a group of people that we thought would be able to get on with it. And it's not as if we have the luxury of much time to do it. So at the heart of it, that's the reason why we made the change. It doesn't have to mean the prior CEO didn't do a good job. He did a good job in a lot of areas. But in an area which will determine how the company is valued going forward, it's not just current earnings. You guys do all the analytical work. You're the investors. It's not just current earnings. It's the prospects for future growth that really matter. And we as a board were not prepared to just let that drift along. Eventually leaving us with only one option, which would probably be to sell the company. And I'm sure in other questions we'll get around to that. But we do believe there is growth in this company. We just have to embrace it and get on with it. So we put in place, I think, the team that we think is a first-class team and will deliver what we need going forward.
Okay. Can we talk about that team a little bit? So, you know, you've made the changes. You've actually, it looks like, rolled out some new roles with things like a chief brokerage officer as well. Can you talk about the structure there and why you think this is the team that's going to be successful going forward?
Well, again, active board, active discussion. We thought we had a couple of good internal candidates. We still think we have a couple of good internal candidates. And there was much discussion around promoting the general counsel. I'll come to Carl specifically in a second. I hope I don't embarrass him too much. But the board has a high regard for Carl. But promoting general counsel is not typical. We're all aware of that. And there have been examples of a general counsel being promoted which has not been that successful. So we're a sensible board. We don't want to look stupid. We want to do the right thing. But at the end of the day, we said, what is the right thing? Who is the best choice to be the CEO of the company? And we alighted on Carl. And our considerations were thoughtful. He works very well with the board. We work very well with him. I think the relationship between management and board is a good one. It's appropriate. We will ask the questions and we're challenging, but it's open and fairly straightforward. And I think that is the relationship that we have with Carl, which matters. We need to know what's going on. We need to be able to trust each other. We also seen, which many of you haven't, what Carl has done. Carl is, I hope he's not offended, he's more of a Mr. Inside. But he's been involved in a lot of activities and a lot of things that we have done, a lot of very challenging activities, many of which you're aware of. But he has been very, very deeply involved in them and fixed them and taken care of them. I jokingly said a couple of days to Mike Pizzi, that he and Paul, and before Mike, Matt Odette, they were the glamour boys. They got out to talk to the analysts and the investors, whereas Carl was always stuck in the cupboard doing the dirty work. But that is in fact the reality of what has gone on. And we've seen that. You don't see it. We see it. He is highly respected in the company. We know this is an abrupt change. We wanted it to be as smooth as possible. I think we sometimes over-exaggerate that we have more CEOs than hot meals, but the reality is we are very conscious of the fact that we want stability. And the board has been very, very conscious of that for the last 3.5-4 years. So making abrupt changes, believe you me, is literally the bottom of our list. So we're conscious of the fact that an abrupt change is disturbing. It's disturbing to investors, to our owners. It's disturbing to our regulators. But it's also disturbing to our employees. I think think, frankly, it's all gone very well. We can discuss that if you wish. But the fact that Carl is so highly respected by our employees all over the country is not a small thing. He knows the industry. He knows it extremely well. And for me, a modest comment, but a real comment, I've always had the view is the brains were kind of 10 a penny. There aren't a lot of people now to make money. Carl has a penchant for knowing how to generate earnings, and that matters to us. We don't generate earnings. We'll just sit there as a small player, and we all know what that means in the long run. So that was our rationale for promoting Carl to CEO, and I would say that was I will tell you, it was a unanimous, non-questioned decision by a challenging board. The fact that we bought Options House has the opportunity to bring back Michael Curcio. Some of you folks probably know Michael. He did a good job when he was at E-Trade, and he's done a very, very fine job at Options House. And I'm sure the owners of Options House are very pleased with the transaction, and we're very, very pleased to have their capabilities. But he is an industry pro. He's been around. He knows the brokerage business inside and out, and it is our intention to place a large proportion of our brokerage activities under him, because if we're going to increase that growth rate by the 2 or 3%, which we think we really have to do, we need someone who knows his way around the block to be able to do that. And in terms of me, the board asked me if I would become executive chairman for a period of time. It's an unusual role. It's not. It exists in other companies, certainly ones even that I'm involved in. I've been on the board for 4 years. I have a lot of affection for E-Trade. I thought long and hard before I went on the board because I saw what had happened in the past. But I have a lot of affection for the company. I said I would do it. I personally like to keep a fairly low profile, but I've had a reasonable amount of success in a number of businesses over a number of years, and I think I add a lot of value to what's going on. My role will not be a permanent role. It'll be there for a period of time. So we felt very comfortably that we had in terms of Ken's specific question, that we were putting people in place that would drive the growth which we know we have to have. And it goes hand in hand with people like Mike and other senior people. We have a good senior management team for a relatively small institution, relatively small. So we feel, as a board, and as I hope that the management team feels this way, I think they do, that we've put in place the people that will put their money where their mouth is and get growth back into the company.
Okay. Carl, so in your new glamorous role here on stage addressing us all, so I was hoping you could give us some insight on your plans. It seems like you've got some tall orders there. So as you assume the seat here, you know, what are your focuses going to be? What's your mission? What's the charge for you here?
So thank you all for coming, and Ken, thanks for having us. So thank you for hosting my first time in the chair. I've been at the company for 7.5 years on the inside. I represented the company from 2000 until I joined the company on their brokerage M&A activity. So I'm not a stranger to E-Trade or to what's gone on around here. but with that in mind, this is going on my 49th hour in the role, and I haven't really had the opportunity to sit down with my executive team yet to put a finer point on some of the things I'm going to say. So I just wanted to know that these are my initial thoughts, and we will refine them as we go forward. So I think first and foremost, Options House, right? We definitely paid a full and fair price for Options House, and with that comes an immediate sort of leg up for us in a space that we had lagged for a while. So that will be a primary focus, is on getting the integration done, getting it done properly and in a manner that creates value. I think, secondly, it's trying to empower and make sure that our management team is empowered to get things done, right, to go out and achieve the growth that we have. It's the reason I set Mike up the way that I have. I really look forward to Mike Curcio coming back. He's a proven industry leader. He knows the space as well as anyone I've spoken to out there. And giving him the tools to be successful and drive some of the growth that he has been so successful with at Options House to bring us back to our roots here at E-Trade. Right. The third thing, I think, is just walking through and making sure that our company is as efficient as it can be as it looks for growth, and we go out into the marketplace and pivot from sort of the foundational efforts that we've had over the past few years to go out and grow again. So making sure that we've sort of ferreted out the inefficiencies, some of the structural impediments we've built ourselves as we've put this massive foundation in place to become more nimble in what we do. And then at the end of that, right, the structure that we've built and the regulatory standing that we now have is extremely important to us, extremely important to our regulators, and that's something that we will not lose focus on. Right? I've been to the dark days. I've seen what happened. We won't backslide. So that will remain a focus going forward. I think that's important with some of the growth initiatives that we have as well, right? You can't integrate, you can't go out and do acquisitions, and you certainly can't cross 50 without your eye on the ball from a regulatory perspective.
Fair enough. You know, Roger, in the releases and in your statements earlier, you talked about some of the core business growth that's been under pressure. I was hoping you could elaborate on that one in particular. Really, you know, what's the board focused on? What's the key here to address in order to get that moving forward?
Well, I don't think there's any great magic in what we're focused on. I mean, we're focused on the same things you guys are focused on. If we don't grow our accounts, you know, we don't grow our trades. If we don't grow the assets on our balance sheet. We don't grow margin. We don't grow the profile of the kind of people we want. So clearly, we are focused on all of those areas, very typical, very normal. I don't sound glib, but when I say there's no magic, there's no magic. That's what you have to do in this industry. We do have other elements to our company, which I think would be very, very valuable sources of new business, like the corporate services business, where we are an industry leader, and I would hope we would do more in that. I think we've done a good job, and I hope we will continue to do more in that. But we're focused on all of the traditional measurements that you would see that get published in the industry on a regular basis. I think that our sense is, and the market has a huge influence, so in a way, it's not necessarily an absolute number we're looking for. Do you get 50 this month or 30? It's kind of silly. It's really relative performance, and I do think over the course of the last few years, our relative performance has fallen behind some of our peers. And I mentioned this earlier, and I'm not being a sycophant, I think we're respectful of our peers. I think they know what they're doing. So our core growth has fallen behind, and if one thinks about it, we really shouldn't happen. I mean, we are a smaller company. Mikhail was talking a second ago about nimbleness, and we should be able to grow that bit faster. Now, these are challenging times. These are tough times in the marketplace. But I think clearly those are the areas that we have fallen behind, and that's why, again, I guess I'm repeating my mantra of the earlier comment. That's why we decided let's get on with it. Let's make the change now and put the people in place that we believe will do the job.
Carl, from your seat, I mean, when you hear that, what are you thinking? A lot of those kind of growth initiatives take time to materialize. So, you know, how are you thinking about addressing those right off the bat?
So, initially, there are three or four things that we can do. One is focus on our marketing, right? We haven't done a good job lately of getting out in front, of touching our customers, right? Whether it be through digital channels, through traditional media. We haven't done a good job of letting our customers know who we are, what we offer, and what we have in store for them. There are a couple of examples of that, Ken, when you take a look at sort of where we've been. We rolled out a fantastic product, right, in our adaptive portfolio. Built from the ground up, it offers some different little bells and whistles from what we have that our competitors have. It offers a nice level fee. It's a low fee. It's a low, you know, cash invest that's required in it, a low amount of cash to be kept in it. So it's out there, and we haven't really spoken about it very much. We haven't rolled it out with big fanfare. We haven't used it as a tool to go out and attract our customers. We haven't done a good job in our marketing area of talking to people about the other things we offer, right, rather than just our trading technology, our retirement investment and savings group. We've invested a lot of time and money, and we have very strong people who run that group. We need to get out in front of that and show our customers what we have and induce new customers to come along and join E-Trade for reasons other than, you know, clicking a button to make a trade. Right? I think the second piece that I would look at, talked a little bit about efficiency, but where I really come from, when I look at efficiency, I'm talking about from when you conceive a product, design a new product, to roll out a product, it takes us too long. Right? When I went to Chicago on Monday and we rolled out with Options House and we spoke to those employees, that's an exciting environment. It was invigorating to be around folks who love their product, who live it, who know what it does for their customers, who know what their customers want to see when they go into the trading cockpit in Options House, and it's just brilliant, right? The speed with which they take products to market is impressive. To use that as a blueprint, to look at getting E-Trade back to what we can do, which is what I've seen and what I've loved in this company since 2000 when I first started representing it, right, was speed to market, nimble, They rolled things out. It was cutting edge. It was innovative. It was disruptive. That's where I'd like to get us again, and I think Mike Curcio and his team at Options House gives us a nice blueprint. If we can adopt even half of that, it's a huge win from that transaction. Right. Finally, you know, Ken, when I look at the company and the things that Roger and I have been working on and talking about, and the things the board is focused on and Mike Pizzi is focused on, our cost structure, right? We need to be efficient. We need to take a look at how we can get our operating leverage up. There are a lot of easy wins, I believe, on our cost structure. If we can roll that out, I believe that we can fund the growth that we're talking about without impacting our operating margins. To me, that's hugely important to make sure that we're not dumping money into the business that we can't find in other places. So I think there are a lot of easy wins as we roll through this, and we'll see where we go from there. But initially, Ken, that's where my head is.
Great. So that all sounds like a lot of work you have ahead of you. I know in the past when we've talked about E-Trade and talked about your peers, you know, the thought of an acquisition target always comes up when we mention your company.
Yeah.
So
you notice, huh?
I've tended to notice, especially at this conference as well. So now with growth seeming to be something you're going to have to work on quite hard here over the next year or 2 years, why not just decide to sell at this point? Why not look for a broader partner to acquire you?
Well, it's not an unreasonable question. It's obviously a question we've been asked before. Let me take you all back up modestly to a little bit about the board. The board is active. The board is thoughtful. It works with management. It doesn't delude itself. It talks about all the issues which are relevant to protecting or adding shareholder value. And by the way, we're as concerned about protecting shareholder value as we are adding to it. We're just looking over the horizon and assuming everything is fine. We're very, very protective of that. So we do debate this. And we've debated it at some length about what is the best way to grow. It's a constant and active debate. We have very lengthy executive sessions at our board meetings. It happens constantly because we're always discussing these topics. Once a year, we have our bankers, we use JPM, for this issue to come in and assess the company and where it stands. We look at our intrinsic value about as to where it stands versus where we literally stand in terms of market valuation. That is a regular process for the board because we want to know what's the scoreboard like, how are we doing. Specifically behind Ken's question, I would say, how do we feel at the moment? At the moment, we feel that the company is best remaining independent. We do think there are a number of areas where we can add value to the company. Carl has touched on them, so forgive me for being repetitive, but I will be repetitive. I think that the work to expand the balance sheet, I think, is valuable work. We all have views on where interest rates are going to go and therefore how valuable that will be. Mike has talked a lot about it on the earnings calls. We do believe that it's valuable to the company. We would like the benefit of that for our shareholders, our existing shareholders. There is operating leverage to be gained in the company. We are going to need to spend, I suspect, more money on expanding our distribution system and our marketing system. A number of you have commented on that in your various reports. I think our goal, I think, for Carl and for Mike, is to generate a lot of that through improved operating leverage, rather than coming back and say, oh, by the way, guys, we're spending another $10 million or another $20 million. I think we believe that's there. I think it should be a constant of any company anyway. You should be always looking for other ways in which you can improve your operating leverage. I do believe we can improve our marketing. There are those who have a love of marketing. I use it in the generic sense. Please don't think I'm just talking about advertising, because that's what everybody always thinks. But in the broadest sense of the word, people either love the baby or don't love the baby. Me, I was indifferent. I thought it was an amusing piece of entertainment. But, you know, done the dime, we'll get you a cup of coffee. I mean, we're not there to entertain. Money is a serious business. So I was one of those that was supportive when the management team wanted to move away from the baby advertising. I offer this just in terms so you see how we think about things. But I think we've been disappointed. I mean, and clearly the baby helped raise our profile. We've always said we punch above our weight, et cetera, et cetera. And there was very high awareness of this particular institution. But translating awareness into effective business drivers and into revenue and into earnings is not always as straightforward as it might sound. And I think it's fair to say that we do think we can do more in the marketing space in the generic sense of that word. whether it's through our advertising execution or through our product development. Carl touched on a lot of these things. But it's something we have we've debated at great, great length. And I think also the Options House acquisition. I didn't know this, so shame on me, but when we were going through discussion about it yesterday after Mike and Carl got back from Chicago, and the board looked at this acquisition very carefully. Unanimous decision to buy the company. Carl said we paid a full price. We did. But we thought this would add a lot to our product capability and to be able to build a business and this re-energizing behind growth. But when I was talking, when we were talking yesterday, I didn't realize that an Option House client does 48 option trades a year. Our guys do about 12. You're all very mathematically oriented, you're all familiar with the data, but that gives you some indication of the upside if we're able to use this. I mean, we think it'll be an accretive deal. We think we'll get better returns than our cost of capital. But it also, I think, will enable us to, and again, Carl has covered this, and I forgive him for being repetitive, but it will enable us to drive growth in our business. So for all those reasons, we want that value attributed to our shareholders. But having said that, you know, we don't have infinite patience. And Ken's first question, why do we make the move? Because we don't have infinite patience. We could have sat around for another 6 or 9 months and done nothing. And we would have been 6 or 9 months farther back in terms of getting along the growth path that we want. And it's not as if we hadn't been discussing it for the prior 6 or 9 months either. So I don't want to, again, give you the impression we're like the thought police. It's not a police state, but the board is actively focused on getting value. And so we don't have infinite patience. There is a time horizon. We would like to see some real improvement in our performance over the course of the next 18 to 24 months. I don't think that's unreasonable. I know Carl doesn't. I know Mike doesn't. I don't think the board does. So we expect to see that. The team gets support. We expect to see results. So do our shareholders. But, and there's always the but, what would happen if, in fact, we couldn't do this? Remember I said earlier, we're as focused on protecting shareholder value as we are the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow of growing it. There is no doubt that if we could not grow the company, we considered that this company was better in other people's hands in terms of shareholder value, we would address that. So nothing's off the table. It isn't on the table at the moment for all the reasons I think both Carl has said and I've said. But we would not take it off the table. We would not rule it off. We are driven by how do you generate shareholder value. And by the way, one last comment on that front. We're not just looking for a quick win. If we see the trends right and we see, you may have noticed I mentioned 2 or 3% a few times. If we can see that kind of level of growth in the business, I think that is approaching a sustainable level of growth which will continue to add shareholder value. I'm ignoring the vagaries of the market, which we don't control. But if we can get to that 2 or 3% growth, we would remain as an independent company, I suspect, because it would generate the cash and our ability to do more things. And there'll be many discussions about acquisitions. We don't rule out acquisitions. But in the context of accelerating our growth endeavors, we are not going to spend like drunken sailors. The same attention to detail will exist. And we will not buy anything because it happens to add a scale. A little bit of scale for a period of time. We'll only buy if we think it's going to give us the financial returns we want, or if it adds substantially to the strategic advantages that we need. There are areas of distribution that we don't participate in the same way that some of our competition do. Can we expand in those areas? Can we do more with the corporate services business? We're at least a winner. But from me and from the team, take it as guaranteed that we will not make stupid acquisitions and we will not make stupid spending decisions just to drive a few extra yards of accounts. We want to make certain that we get good business and it's sustainable and it pays for itself.
Okay, so it seems like as part of the plan here, you guys have talked a lot about Options House being a key component of that growth going forward. I mean, the other one you guys have in the market now I wanted to talk about a little bit, which was Adaptive Portfolios. You launched that in June. You had a robo-capacity before to some extent. It wasn't very, detailed. This one really adds a lot more capabilities to that. So I was just wondering, you know, how you're seeing clients interact with this, what the feedback's been, And then, you know, what do you see this product becoming for you over time? What kind of growth metrics is this going to generate for the firm here?
So I can't get into sort of growth metrics on Adaptive just yet, because
okay.
It's very early days on Adaptive. But as I said earlier, I think when we roll this out, we didn't really spend the time and fanfare to deliver the product as I would have liked to have seen it delivered to the marketplace. So it's there. It's got a little north of 100 million, right, which is nothing to run around and scream about and say that, you know, we've done an amazing job. And a lot of that comes from our own internal customers who we slotted into, you know, into our robo product. So looking at it, it's one of the keys for us, right, getting it out there into the marketplace, because we've taken so much time to develop it. It's a very smart product. The way it's been done is a little different than what other people, what other individuals and sort of companies have put together. It offers you the ability to have a passive-only approach, or sort of an active and passive approach, or an active and passive management approach, right, with all ETFs on one hand or ETFs and mutual funds based on the other, based on what you choose up front. And we've also made our financial consultants, a group of them, available to talk to folks about, you know, what they're doing in this product. They don't have anything to do with the product, obviously, robo, but we have made some of our financial consultants available to talk to the folks who use it. So it is important. It's one of the new products we rolled out. It's one of the first big splashes we made in quite a long time, and very few people know about it. Right? You guys all know about it because we talked about it on the earnings call, but we haven't done a heck of a good job in terms of penetrating our customer base with it. So it's a focus. Right? Whether or not it'll be the focus, no, it's part of our strategy, but it's demonstrative of an issue that we have with our marketing and getting ourselves out there.
Right.
Can just before you go on, can I just add one other comment? Several people have asked me this, and I know it's on your questions or not. But I've been asked the question about, you know, so there's Carl, and there's you, and there's Mike, and there's Mike. And we have a lot of Mikes, by the way, if you haven't noticed. What will the management structure be? How are you organized? How will you work together? Which I think is a very relevant, it's a very relevant issue. For those of you, and I have been asked the question, so I obviously it's not clear to some. Carl is the CEO. Everyone reports into Carl. We have no awkward structures in terms of how the place is run. That is the managed structure of this institution. I'm the executive chairman. Carl reports into me. I report into the board. That's the way it works. I think that Carl and I have known each other for quite a few years. He'll speak for himself. He's a big boy. We've always got on well. I think we have a good relationship. It's a very good commercial relationship. It's a very good professional relationship. And I like Carl. He's a decent guy. he's a nice person to work with. I feel the same about the management team generally. So there's no awkwardness in terms of how we work together or as how we address some of the issues that are out there. So anyway, I just wanted you all to know that before Ken progressed with his questions.
So next one for me was kind of a follow-on to the robo piece there. It seems to really be related to some of the new regulation coming down the pike with Department of Labor. I'm wondering, A, how that product positions you from that standpoint, and then just broadly how you're thinking about Department of Labor. It seems to be a very talked about item coming and really impacting the business models for a lot of firms, not only in the e-broker space, but across the entire financial services industry. So just wanted to get your higher-level thoughts on that and, you know, how you guys are working behind the scenes to address any things you need to change in your business model.
I mean, look, directionally, the DOL and what they want to do, I completely understand it. I get it, right? We should always be in the best interests of our customers, right? Anybody who's going to interact with you with financials or with dollars involved, they want to know you're acting in your best interest, and it's incumbent on us to do so. So I get it from that perspective. Our robo, just staying with the first part of your question, right? Our Adaptive portfolio, we have designed it with DOL in mind. We also don't have any proprietary or other products baked in there, so it makes it a little easier. We've looked at it from a level fee basis, so we feel like we're pretty good on that front, and we do have teams of experts who have been looking at this, right? Lawyers, consultants, a bunch of people helping us. And we've done the same thing with our other product set, with our website. I think the trickiest part of this, Ken, is going to be where does the DOL draw the line on just what advice is, right? What constitutes advice? What kind of calculators? What kind of products on your website that we've put out there to make it easier for our customers to interact with their own finances and now they may be deemed to be advice, which means we either need to wrap them or we need to make sure that we have the right contracts in place with our customers. And that's cumbersome, right? It's difficult and it puts more burden on the customers. It also makes the company, and all companies we've spoken to about this, and we do have pretty good industry knowledge about this, it makes folks a little uncomfortable in terms of just what the DOL rule provides to the customer. So absolutely acting in best interest of customers, that's first and foremost for us. And I think we have taken the time, and we feel like we're in a pretty good position in terms of dealing with the DOL. And we look forward to further guidance, right? We've promised further guidance coming out. We look forward to that coming to make sure that we're all on the right track.
Okay. One other big topic for you guys I wanted to touch on before kind of hitting on some closing thoughts was really around capital. I mean, you've been consistent on this as far as growing the balance sheet, moving above that $50 billion level. You've managed to fold in some acquisitions here as well. Can you just talk about the priorities here moving forward? Is there anything from an M&A perspective? And then, you know, what does the crossing the $50 billion really do for you guys from a flexibility standpoint moving forward? Is it really just about growing earnings longer term, or does it provide you any other kind of added benefits?
We can start with the $50 billion. I mean, we've always looked at the $50 billion as the amount of deposits that are really necessary to earn an adequate return on the capital once you adjust out the one-time costs. We've spent a lot of time on it. We think that number is really in the $6 to $8 billion range. At the end of last quarter, we had done the math. We had looked at some of the what's going on in the money fund reform. We saw that we're going to be in that range really sometime next year, and so we really put the plan in action to get there. We feel good at this level of investment yield that we're going to be able to generate a return that's in excess of our cost of capital. Obviously, we hope rates improve from here, but we feel really good about that decision.
Okay. And anything from an M&A perspective that potentially, I mean, is this kind of actually folding in Options House? I mean, A, how do you feel about, you know, the synergies you guys have laid out there on the cost side, the revenue side, the cost avoidance side? I mean, are you comfortable with the close to $85 million, I think it is, between synergies and cost avoidance you have there? And, you know,
sure, I can cover that. I mean, we feel really good about the synergy levels. We talked a long time about, you know, what you gain from when you get the cash economics of putting that cash on your balance sheet from broker dealers that don't fully monetize the value of the cash. We get the full economics of the margin. That's generating the $14 million in revenue synergies. When you look at the overlap between the companies, the expense base, and what we can take out, we feel really good on the $49 million of expense synergies. We also feel really good about the $20 million of cost avoidance, really the options platform that we're not going to have to build, launch, and bring to market over time. So it really does advance us in the market and market position, and we should be, you know, and we're very happy that we're able to close about a month earlier than scheduled, which means we can get going on it.
Yeah, and don't lose sight of the fact that, like, when you look at Mike Curcio in terms of the shop that he's run at Options House and how lean they operate and what they get done, to bring some of that on board at E-Trade again is a very welcome thing for us. So we look forward to having him back running the brokerage. And integrating Options House. I mean, when I look back, Ken, you know, 5-7 years when I started and looked at where we were out there in terms of a trading perspective. We were the guys to come to for options, for mobile, for all of the different platforms that we put out. We're an innovator. And somewhere along the way, we lost our way, right? Because we were forced to focus on foundational issues, forced to focus on all the regulatory environment that we found ourselves in. We've done a really good job at getting to that and getting that taken care of, and that will always be part of our core DNA going forward. But when you look at the opportunities that we have from Options House, that is absolutely a primary focus. Right? And just to answer the rest of your question, because I know folks are interested, from an M&A perspective, as long as we have the risk framework around our institution and we have the capital, we'll continue to look at things that would drive value for our shareholders. Right? We will be as diligent, deliberate, and focused as we were in finding the fit with Options House and in bringing Mike back and go forward from there.
Okay. The last one I had was really for everyone here on the panel. We've heard a lot about, you know, what the plans are, what you guys see as some of the core drivers. You know, if I'm a shareholder of E-Trade, why do I want to be invested in the firm over the next 5 years? What should I be looking for? I guess what are the goalposts along the way? So
I think getting back to, right, if I look at the company 5 years from now, I see us back to our roots, being a lean shop that's innovating and disrupting the marketplace, that's delighting its customers with products every day that they can use, right, that are functional for them, that deliver the value that they want, for what we charge in return for that service. So I look at Options House as the first step in that direction. We look to get more efficient in the way we deliver things. We look to get more operating leverage out of the business so that we can fund our growth initiatives without messing with our operating margins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'd like to see happen. So it's a tall order, but I think we have the right team in place. And with Roger's support, and Roger went into his thoughts on his role in the company, I'm extremely grateful that he's here. Right? He provides an amazing amount of experience, and happy that he's here with me. So just to pass that out.
Okay, great. I think that's all the time we had, unless anyone had any parting shots. But otherwise, thank you all very much for attending.
Thank you all
thank
very
you
much.
Thank you.
Thank you.